something, something, something. We got to get a band someday.
Well, hello and welcome to the unofficial Unreal Engine podcast, where we talk about all things Unreal Engine and also eating strange mushrooms. I'm your host. My name is Alex Coulomb, and I have a wonderful guest host with me today. Welcome, everyone, to Corey Williams. That's a weird way to make an introduction, but say hi, Corey.
Hi. Hello. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Really excited to have you on the podcast. This has been a long time coming. And to start, before we properly introduce you for everyone who doesn't already know what an incredible, amazing, talented individual you are, we'll begin with our usual word associations. Oh, but because Jacob's not here, my usual co-host, he's the one who says, please remember to like, rate, subscribe, all those YouTube things that Corey knows so much about and could probably give us a lot of good lessons in. Do those things. Now we go to our word associations. And so, Corey, this is real simple. I'm just going to say a word. You tell me the first thing that comes to your head. Let's go. Home.
Love.
Work.
Love.
Food.
Forgetful.
Travel.
Vacation.
Drink.
Quiet.
Virtual production.
Love.
Unreal Engine.
Coping.
Good answer. UEFN.
Struggling.
Excellent. Now a couple longer form questions, if you like. How do you take your coffee?
I don't.
Yeah. We've had a surprising number of guests.
I don't. I don't. Caffeine, yes. Coffee makes me weirdly emotional.
Oh,
and I can't handle any more emotions. Yeah. I'm already a very emotional artist. So.
Sure. So what's your substitute? Do you go for tea or something else?
You know what? Right now I've been into those Celsius drinks. Like I don't like fizzy in the morning. I don't like the regular energy drinks that we've known for the years. You know, like it's just a green tea extract, but it's kind of like the best one I've had. And it just does the right things to me. So yeah.
That's really fantastic. What is your favorite time of day, Corey?
Oh, man. Anytime I'm awake, to be honest with you. I mean, I know that sounds cheesy and cliche, but my wife, she's like, I love sleep. And I'm like, sleep? Why? Why would you want? Like, because every minute of the day is just so much cool. You know, like you can make cool happen. And even moments that are just like, oh, man, you know, like how exciting is it that you have something forward to look forward to? You know, like that's where I'm at. So like just. I don't have a favorite part. Every single part is fun and interesting in its own way. The mornings you wake up and you get to like review the dreams you had the night before. And you really get to think about what you're going to do and get excited about your day. And then take the kids to school. I get to be with my kids singing songs, you know, playing the trap versions of every kid's song you can imagine because my kids are 6 and 8 years old. Yeah. And then you get to work and work is work. Dude, I get to play all day. I feel like I'm professionally unemployed. And then you know, you get off work and then what do you get to do? You get to be with family. And that's just like, that's the reward for everything. And then, you know, nighttime is nighttime. You get to consume content, play video games, do that. And then sleep. That's my least favorite part of the day. There you go.
Except the dreams. I mean, dreams can be cool, right?
Well, so I'm an avid dreamer. Yeah.
I think you're a lucid dreamer, right?
I am. I'm a lucid dreamer. So like, that's honestly one of the gifts that I have, how I've been able to learn this so quickly is I have this weird, it's actually a problem in my brain that I always every single night lucid dream. And so I live a second life in my dream and I'm constantly working. So like I will tell myself before I go to bed what I need to do and I will spend all night doing it. The problem is I also have extreme ADHD, but I utilize that to my advantage to hyper focus and hyper learn. But that ADHD also is made worse by the fact that I don't sleep well at night. So there's that. Like I never get into the deep, deep sleep like people should.
Yeah. Oh, that's fascinating. It's like the best version of Fight Club, though. Like you're not going off and no one's getting murdered. You're just working more on your art and your craft. And sounds like the best case scenario for dealing with that.
Yeah.
What is a time, can be any time at all, that you remember laughing uncontrollably, just a real belly buster of a laugh?
Oh, man. I've had a lot of those moments. This is a weird one. My bald friend who sweats too much, he does this thing sometimes where he gets frustrated and he starts going and it makes the funniest sound and I can't help but laugh. And I think he does it on purpose. And he's like, he's a YouTuber, like an old school YouTuber. You know that there's the bacon dogs, like bacon, the maple kind. Yeah, yeah. It's like this. It was a viral video. Anyway, he's the one that made that video, and he's the one that does that thing and makes me laugh. And every time I hear it, I burst into tears laughing. And I've had many moments, but that's one that just right now comes into mind because it's been hot. So
that's amazing. This isn't one of the questions. We're actually done with the questions. But before I properly introduce you, I'm curious, do you still feel kind of like how you felt when you were a kid? Or do you feel like you've had some kind of moment of like, now I'm an adult?
What's an adult? Really? I've been a kid every day of my adult life because, frankly, I had a terrible childhood.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm one of those cases. So like, I am so grateful to be an adult, to be able to do the things that I want and to be able to try to, you know, help inspire the world and to help grow good humans, so that, you know, I can do that. So if being an adult is being able to do these amazing things that I get to do every day of my life, like this is the best thing in the world. So I love being an adult, if that's the case.
That's really excellent. Okay. So welcome again, Corey. I'm going to try to give a brief introduction to you, but it's really hard because you are all over the place. My introduction, of course, was back when Corey was, he still is, but like a viral YouTube sensation. And I saw quite a few of his videos. My wife and I bonded over like, oh, we both enjoy laughing at Corey's videos. I guess we have a shared sense of humor. But you have quite a few YouTube channels. You had Mr. Safety, S&P Films, Just for Kids, Live Each Day, which is more with your family. The channel that's done now that we probably won't talk about too much because it'll make us both very sad. But today, I think we're mostly going to try to cover your recent foray, I say relatively recent, into film production and virtual production and all this incredible work that you've been doing with Unreal Engine and all those kinds of things. But let's start by just saying, how are you introducing yourself to people these days when people don't know you and they're like, hi, I'm so-and-so. What's your way in?
You know, the truth is I don't, I'm kind of at a point in my life where I'd rather just listen to people.
Sure.
And so, cause I've spent so much of my life talking about myself and the things that I do and I still do. Right. But like, I do it in that environment, but like after listening to them, that's when I tell them what I do or what it is I do, because I do so many things at the same time. I can't just be like, hey, I'm this and that and this and that and this, because it would take forever. I've lived so many different lives throughout my creative career that I can't just stick to one thing. So yeah, it just depends on who we're talking to. For you, I'm a virtual production specialist.
Fantastic.
You know, motion capture specialist, whatever you want to call me.
Yeah. And not to put too fine a point on it, you've also made some VR content as well. Early in the pandemic, you had a VR game made in Unity, I believe, that was dealing with, you know, not enough toilet paper being out there.
Yeah, yeah. Because I wanted to challenge myself to create a game that was based on the pandemic that had just happened. I got back from Hawaii on an empty plane. It was like the best time to have a vacation, man. It was just before the pandemic. We were there for 2 weeks. It was, and then empty plane home. Anyway, I got home and I was like, hey, I'm going to make a VR game. So like, I think it was like, it took me a day and a half to create this really great game. And I put it up on itch.io. I think it's called Toilet Paper Panic. And yeah, it was just a lot of fun. So, but yeah, no, I've dabbled in VR. I've done quite a bit of VR, and that's how my love for virtual production started. Actually, was I was creating these VR puppetry studios and making videos with that. And so I, you know, a lot of success happening. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'd love to hear a little bit too about your journey across, you know, using game engines. Was Silly Crocodiles the first thing you were doing with that, or were there others before?
Yeah. Yeah. Because originally, so Silly Crocodile, for those who don't know, it's a 2.5D character that it was just like a little wooden toy thing that we have. And I turned it into something that could move and walk and talk. And I wanted it to be very simple so kids can pretend to be Silly Crocodile at home. Well, it blew up and that channel was just exploding. That's my YouTube channel, Just for Kids. And originally it was just 2D images and I was doing 2D stuff. And I'm like, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be something that I can do to make these faster without having to do that. And I was like, what if I did it in VR? What if I learned how to be a game developer? And so in 2019, I taught myself how to do game dev.
So cool. You seem pretty fearless. You seem pretty willing to dive headfirst into things that you have no experience in and just figuring it out. Where does that come from?
ADHD, really. I mean, no, I've kind of always had that in me. Like, if I get excited about something, I'm able to hyper learn. And so I allow myself to be excited. I allow myself to have those shifts and changes into the directions that I get excited about, which is why I have so many experiences that I've done through my life. And, you know, they would take this whole podcast to really explain the life I've lived. But no, I'm just one of those creative individuals that's like, hey, if it makes you happy, do it. Like, don't worry, move forward. If you believe in it, you know, you'll get something really great out of it. And so far, my heart's never steered me wrong.
Yeah. So I remember a little bit following your journey into Unreal Engine, and especially with Silly Crocodile, starting to figure out that some things that were harder have gotten easier. And, you know, there was kind of a process there. What's your thoughts back on that journey? Are you glad that you started in Unity? And by the way, this isn't a podcast where we're like all Unreal all the time. I started Unity.
I will tell you the truth about everything.
Yeah,
an open book.
Of course. Yeah, I started in Unity too, and like I also have plenty of things that I can say I like more about Unity than Unreal. So go ahead, say whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I just want to say for the people listening, it's like there's no one is not better than another.
Yes,
it's true. It's not. They have their own strengths, their own abilities, you know, and so it's like depends on what you need. But yeah, I am very happy that I started out in Unity first because it was very cartoony, very simple. It helped me learn at a different type of pace. Mm-hmm. It helped me understand code because there wasn't any visual scripting. I think now they have some sort of node system that you can do like Unreal, but not quite the same.
Correct.
But when you learn C#, you know, like you get to understand why this does that. And then you really get to obsess, but also it makes you a cleaner developer. So like when you're doing things, your naming conventions, your file structures, all of that are super clean. And when you have a really great clean file structure, then your workflow will be so much faster. Whereas I found that when I came to the, you know, Unreal side, a lot of other developers that I've worked with, and I'm sorry, everybody that I've worked with, this is true. I've seen a lot of people who are very messy in their projects, who mm-hmm. just started in Unreal and only did that, but also don't understand certain things about why this does that. They just go, mm-hmm. copy this one thing and this will just work. But I'm the type of brain that's like, I want to know why exactly it works. So I obsess right. on that. And so like, I want to train and help the community in some way to kind of mix the greatness of Unity and that learning experience with the speed and pace of which Unreal has allowed us to be with the visual scripting of Blueprints. So yeah, I think they're both, like I said, they're both extremely valuable tools, and I still love Unity.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong. Like if I want to make like a stylized project with something that like really appeals to kids or something that works better on phones, you know, that's going to be Unity all the way. Yeah. But Unreal, it's, you know, it's more filmy. It's more, a little bit more real life ish, you know, but yeah, they have their strengths.
Yeah. Excellent. That's really interesting. And when you first started to make the transition, or I guess really, I want to ask about your learning style. Like when you dive into Unity, you dive into Unreal, dive into UEFN, are you the kind of person who just wants to open the software and kind of mess around until you're doing the thing you want to do? Do you like to look at YouTube tutorials? How's that usually work?
Early on, I looked at YouTube tutorials to just understand how things worked. Like it doesn't, this is something I like to tell people. It's like, it doesn't help you to copy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't help you to take somebody's code and slap it onto yours and then it works, because if something breaks or something goes wrong, you don't know what's going on. Also, like, you're not going to know what sort of things can help you in a project in the future. So if I take a tutorial, it's more so a tutorial on how can I do exactly this one thing and how can I understand what each of these things do. Mm-hmm. So you can create complex things later without even thinking. Like now I'm to the point, honestly, where it's so rare for me to watch a tutorial. It's like, I pick it up. I visualize what I need. I know the questions to ask. And I just, you know, create it based on that. And I'm very hacky as well. Like one of the great things about being you know, technical artist is understanding how to hack the crap out of everything, you know, because that's really what we kind of are. You know, we're breaking an engine to create our own thing out of it, you know. UEFN, that's something I'm diving into now. Mm-hmm. I didn't take any tutorials going into it, because I was able to look at it and go, okay, I know what this does. The problem with UAFN, though, is there's a lot of stuff behind the things they give you that don't show you those controls. And that's where my brain is struggling, is because I like control. I like power, and I don't have what I need yet. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah. My biggest disappointment moving over to UEFN was when I just tried to migrate an Unreal Engine project over and found that it took a bunch of stuff with it that UEFN not only couldn't handle, but it like stopped it from launching. It was like, there's material functions and like all these blueprint assets that it couldn't read. And I couldn't get UEFN to run until I manually stripped those out. So what I'm so excited about to talk about with Monster Quest in particular is I've been chatting with a lot of people for a while about how there isn't enough narrative, story-driven content in UEFN, even though the potential is there, especially ever since MetaHumans came into the fold. The cinematic tools have gotten better over time. And Monster Quest is, to me, a beautifully story-driven narrative experience where you want to get to the next place, not to just, shoot things or whatever. You want to find out what happens next in the story and what it's all leading to. And hopefully, you know, you also get to go to a second island and get some bonus content. I'd love to hear a little bit about the creation of that and what you learned through the process of just, I guess, being in the muck with UEFN and finding what worked and what didn't.
Sure. Yeah. Monster Quest was it really was a monster quest for me. And again, this is available on UEFN if you want to check it out. I don't know the island code, but you can search Monster Quest.
Hold on. But 3804-5553-4773. There we go.
Yeah. The map is still experiencing some issues because I have found, I'm working with Epic trying to figure out what's going on. It's not my map, it's their thing and da 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 da. Anyway, yeah. So the things that I've learned through the process is, number one, just the limitations of what the tools offer you. Like, I like the fact that they've created such a thing where you can just be like, okay, here's this Lego piece I can throw into here that will do these specific moves. But without using Verse or any of that, it's just going to do only those moves. And it's good for people who are new to the engine, who have never been a game developer, who don't have any background. It's fantastic. Yeah. For somebody like me, frustrating, so frustrating. But I spent, yeah, the initial concept for this was, I just wanted to create something simple that would be easy to play, that you feel like you've kind of played before, but you're like, okay, I want to kill some time because I'm tired of getting shot so many times in Fortnite by all these really great, you know, teens who's just like, I can't play anything else because I get killed all the time. I feel like that's a common story. But this was also a map that I wanted to, it's still teaching myself how to do it, because my first map that I did, it was, I can't remember what it was called. It was like a walrus thing. I don't remember. But anyway, I only took 2 days to make it, right? Just to know the process of UEFN. And then I was like, okay, now my next project, I'm going to spend an entire month, every day for an entire month. I'm going to put off my client projects because I'm already ahead on my client projects. So I'm good. So I spent a whole month making this one. But of course, the launch did not go as planned. In fact, it was not supposed to be launched until tomorrow. Oh. But because there were so many problems with Epic, specifically, it botched the launch so badly.
Yeah, really.
What happened was, for those who don't know, when I went to go get my playtesters on so I could start actually beta testing the game, I was getting a lot of these really bad false flags saying that there was something wrong with my project, but Epic wouldn't tell me what it was, because they review all of the projects with AI first, mm-hmm. and the AI will throw all sorts of errors. And then you've got a handful of humans on the other side going through, trying to review every single submission that comes through. And if they see more than 10, their eyes go cross and they say, no, I'm not dealing with this, moving on. Wow. But that's like, it's a really bad business thing on Epic's part, because they're pushing so hard into wanting to do this, and yet they're so understaffed. They're really making it look bad for their creators and the potential clients. And speaking of clients, like the other part of me doing Monster Quest is proving to another client that I may or may not end up working with that UEFN is worth the time. You know, and that's something I can't really talk more about or anything like that for NDA reasons. But it was so frustrating because I'm like, it's got real potential, but I truly believe that UEFN just is not there yet for creators.
Right.
And the restrictions for creation are still just too tough for us all to manage, I feel.
Yeah. I think that's a totally valid position to take. You know, for my part, I've continually jumped into UEFN every couple months to see what's new and if we can actually do something with it. We haven't even tried to ask a client if they think there's something meaningful there. But we've got a lot of Unreal Engine projects that we would love to utilize within Fortnite and UEFN. Like the fact that you can have 100 players out of the box. Like just the fact that the multiplayer is taken care of. That's great. The cross-platform side of it. The idea that some people could be on, you know, PlayStations and other people could be on phones. That's all really good. But as you alluded to, there's just a lot of missing features that make it really difficult to have a level of creative control. And then even if you do think you've built the thing that you want, then there's all these other ways that bureaucracy and administrative problems can get in the way of it. So kind of a shame.
Yeah. It's also tough too. Like I consider myself an algorithm master. I'm not, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I am like, I know what I'm doing when it comes to algorithms. I can choose if I want to blow something up and I can, you know, all that stuff. Like, and I've helped a lot of people behind the scenes with certain things, but it's their algorithm. I've studied it. I've done a lot of stuff and it's really not good. And I'm not saying in terms of like, it's not good at promoting. I'm saying the problem with their algorithm is it's promoting very bad, harmful things to the community.
Oof.
That is, and I mean, I'm, like I said, I talk and I'm just, I open up.
Yeah.
So Epic, if you're watching me, listen, the problem here is the way that the thing is set up, that their algorithm is set up, is it is encouraging pirating. It's mm-hmm. encouraging other people stealing from other creators. And yeah. it's encouraging really unhealthy behaviors that are going to cause a lot of hatred and anger between their creators. You know, and just like I was telling you earlier before this started, Alex, is that, you know, like one thing I've always said is, you know, the world of creative, you know, expression, it's not a piece of pie you take from, it's the pie you make, you know. And what they're doing is saying that, hey, this is a piece of pie and you're only going to have this much and you can't have followers and you can't be controlled by the things that you like. No, you live by our guidelines, our rules, and what we show is what we want. And so you can steal someone else's work and boom, you know. Like, good example of this is the body cam problem that's happening right now. Mm-hmm. You know, a long time ago, somebody put out a body cam video or a game, got no views, no plays, nothing, went nowhere. And then, of course, fast forward another year forward, and now a body cam game has come out on Steam, and that was, you know, that blew up. And then another creator is like, well, I'm going to copy them and make my own version in Fortnite. And then, of course, that blew up because of the, you know, the direct feed from that. So it's kind of like, that's sketchy. But then because Fortnite has pushed that creator to that point and has gotten that, everybody else is doing it, and now that creator that originally copied is now put down and the other ones are now the biggest. So it's like the whoever's the most recent creator of the newest body cam thing is the one getting all the stuff. So it's like the best thing to do right now is just copy everybody. It's not even about trends at this point. It's just about like, who can you steal from today?
Yeah.
Who can you make a creative living off from someone else's? It's really discouraging. And so, you know, it's scary for me as a creator to create content for Fortnite out of that very fact that my original content, I cannot copy someone else's stuff. My original stuff is in jeopardy of being stolen, the idea, mm-hmm. that sort of stuff. And so what I'm trying to do now is like, you know, I'm going to do one more test with Fortnite. Just, I'm hesitant on this, but here I am. You can see on the screen behind me back here, this is going to be my next map. And I'm not spending very much time on it, but it's unlike anything that I've ever seen on Fortnite. And I have done so much searching and so much playing, and it is different. But here's what's going to happen. And I'm going to call it right now. I think this map is going to do very well. I'm not going to promote it and I'm not going to do a single thing to it. I'm simply going to do my SEO magic and just watch what happens. And then what's going to happen is someone else is going to go, oh, wait, that's cool. I'm going to do it this other way, way crappier. And then their views will overtake mine. And then it'll be this constant shift. And I've noticed, like, even if you have the best looking map or the best playing map, it's more about who is the newest map that has a thumbnail that is equal to or slightly better than yours. So there's all sorts of stuff that just needs to change, you know? And I still see a positive outcome for UEFN and Epic's journey to try to reclaim their lunch from Roblox. Because let's be honest, I feel like they just need to get more people in here that understand algorithm, that understand the process of growing a creator community. And it's not about pitting them against each other. It's about getting them to collaborate, to appreciate each other, and to be a healthy community.
Amen to that. I hope that happens as well. And it just feels like there's a lot of really talented creators kind of being left in the dust. But that's amazing that you have this kind of sixth sense about SEO and how to kind of find a way to still do something that you're excited about, hopefully, but, you know how to play within the bounds of whatever platform is asking you to do. And real quick, before we talk a little more about what's behind us, what's your journey been over the years with the YouTube algorithm, which has notoriously had a few major overhauls where things that were doing very well were suddenly, not performing well at all anymore?
I mean, it's YouTube's algorithm has always been wonky, and it's mm-hmm. always changing, and it always will change. I mean, that's like everything we do. Like, there's people that are going to try to break things, and we're always trying to make the algorithm smarter, because at the end of the day, all we want to do as creators and as Google or, these other big social media platforms, they just want to keep you happy. They just want to give you what you want, and you, the creator, want to create something to make the world a better place or to make a lot of money, whichever you choose. I like the world better place thing. but yeah, I mean, like, starting out on YouTube. So I've been making YouTube videos since September 2005.
Yeah. And coming up on 20 years.
20 years. Yeah. My YouTube channel is an adult and it has moved out. No, off to college, my YouTube channel goes. I've seen everything that has happened. When I first came to YouTube, it was like a dating site, man. It looked so different. And you could easily get to the top of the charts just by, you could fart on camera and that was it. That's all it took back then, and there was no algorithm. It was literally like, you could just game the system. There were people back then that would run refresher bots, which were like, they used them for eBay back in the day to, what are they using for tickets? They used to scalp tickets online and they used to use these refreshers so they could constantly get tickets. I know that because my grandpa did that.
cool. And,
rest in peace, grandpa. Thanks. So he, like, people like that, they would use those and they would get views or whatever. I did try that, being completely honest with you. I did try that. But the problem with it, it was like, it doesn't do anything for you, especially back in 2005. So, like, you're at the top of YouTube, but back then it didn't matter. But, at that point, it was like, I was just trying things and whatever. So, of course, I reached out to YouTube and I told them what I'd done. I said, hey, I used a refresher and I was doing this thing to whatever. And I think I racked up like 400,000 views then with a refresher. Wow. And it was in a matter of like, man, I don't remember what it was. My friend Mike, who was like my next door neighbor, was really the one that did it because he knew how to do it. I didn't know anything about that. He's like, dude, do it. I reached out to YouTube and I said, hey, this is a problem. And then so they reached out. And so I talked with Chad and Steve, and that's where the founders of YouTube, I became friends with them because I ended up being the one that would like figure things out. And over time, I would find problems and I would reach out because I'm like, I genuinely want to grow a big audience here because I already had a large audience on MySpace. Like,
oh, cool. I didn't know that.
I was the number one unsigned comedic music artist in the world. Wow. And so I was also, I was traveling, I was touring, I was singing. That's my other life too. I did, I was a stuntman and a music artist. Sure. Yeah. So time goes on, I helped to develop other tools for YouTube, like annotations. I don't know if you've heard of them, but that was my baby.
Cool. Well done.
And that was, thank you. But of course they're gone now, but there were other things that kind of have changed over time. And even, but I got affected by it. But long story short, I know I'm going all too deep into this, and I, like I said, I could go forever. There's always going to be changes. There always have been changes. And we've had like probably 10 different apocalypses by now. But you know, YouTube at the end of the day, man, like if you want to get a lot of views, the best thing to do is really focus on who your audience is.
Sure.
Don't worry about how big is that audience unless you're specifically wanting to get paid a lot of money, but focus on who they are, what are their habits, all that sort of stuff, and then go for it. Like I've got channels that are massive and I've got channels that are small, but arguably my small channels are just as powerful as the massive ones. You know, like, I mean, obviously my massive ones are just, they're going to be mailbox money for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of how it is. Like right now, I think I'm pulling in about 30 million views a month passively.
Wow.
You know, on my channel. So it's, and I'm not even, I haven't touched them, dude.
Yeah.
So.
Can you talk briefly about, I hear a lot of different discussions about how that monetization typically works. Is it kind of just a direct feed from YouTube? I heard at some point that it was like about $1 for every 1,000 views. Is it more to do with like the ad placements or how it gets brought out to other platforms? Just curious to learn a little more about that.
Yeah. So it depends. There are certain things that pay more than other things. And it depends on trends as well. Like if there's a company that's really wanting to push something out and you happen to be the best person, then your content is going to be the one that's going to get most of that ad money they put into YouTube/Google. But really the way you get paid is you just rack up the views. And there's some things that don't pay well. I'll tell you, like kids content does not pay well. It pays terribly. It's one of the worst things you can get paid doing. But, you know, if you get a ton of views, you get paid very well. You know, like that channel is every year since it's been around has pulled six figures for me.
Wow.
You know, like seriously. And so that channel is just passively a six figure channel. But whereas like when I was daily vlogging on my channel Live Each Day, which used to be Dude Like Hella, we made a lot of money on that, but it wasn't because the ads were good. It's because we had so much sponsored content. Yeah. So sponsors were a great pay. So, you know, I didn't have nearly the audience that I have on my kids channel, but I had the right audience for the stuff that we would do. And we, I mean, for a sponsored video, we got paid anywhere between $8,000 and $30,000 per video.
Huh. Very nice.
So that's, you know, real numbers. And for a channel that wasn't huge, it was decently sized. So it's about speaking to the right people, not a lot of people. And that's what people need to realize about any social media platform.
Yeah. You're reminding me as well that I recall at some point Netflix, and I don't know if they believe this anymore, that they would rather have a show that was a smaller group of people's favorite show than a show that pulls much bigger numbers, but it's all those people's like fifth or sixth favorite show.
Sure. I mean, Netflix, that doesn't make sense for me. Yeah. I don't really understand that concept because they need a lot of people for subscriptions. They're not going to get paid any extra because, you know, this small group of people who like, I don't know, wheelchairs. I don't know.
Were you just looking at a wheelchair? Is that what made
No, I'm in my chair and it has wheels and my brain said wheelchair, not right. Like car, computer, no, whatever. I need a new chair. Anyway, so I do. But no, that I don't understand about Netflix.
Yeah.
But,
well, they're trying to drive subscriber numbers, right? So if they can have a small number of people that are specifically going to subscribe to Netflix because their favorite show is on there, maybe if there's another show that more people are interested in, but it's not quite enough to get them to actually stay subscribed, there's probably some algorithmic math to help figure out what the golden balance is for that. I don't know.
Yeah, they probably have a lot of different departments that some departments do believe that and others don't.
Yeah, sure.
You know, so I think it's just, you know,
perfect. They should hire you to figure out the magic SEO algorithm of it all.
Oh, no. I you know, honestly, like I was doing consulting for a long time doing algorithm stuff, but now I like to do it specifically for people that I have a lot of respect for. And so like, I'll reach out to people and be like, hey, I see that you're doing this thing on YouTube. Let's have a chat and let me tell you the secrets, you know, like, cause I know some things about YouTube and the way that Google can actually physically see and hear you, that can make you better.
Yeah.
You know, and just lots of little things like that. But yeah, I find more joy in that and watching people blow up after I do it than doing the, you know, paid promotional, like they're going to fly me to this place. I'm going to sit in this boardroom and talk to these old guys about how they should be doing this or that. Like, it's
right.
Pays and, well, but it sucks.
And yeah, going back to what you were saying, like, do you want to make a lot of money? You want to change the world and help people? And that's definitely a fork in the road. I want to talk briefly about the masterclass that you toyed with producing for a minute. I remember you did like a poll on LinkedIn and you decided what to do based on that. I was really interested in that masterclass, and maybe you'll still do it someday, but curious if you can tell us a little bit about what you were thinking that multi-week breakdown might have looked like and what you wanted to teach people.
Yeah, man, I really wanted to do that masterclass, but the problem was the community, a lot of people in the community. Well, when I say community, I mean people who were coming into the community who haven't quite built themselves into it yet. A lot of them are giving up. Mm-hmm. And with AI coming around, people had such high hopes for AI, and they still do, that it's taken a lot of the steam out of the creative side of all of this, you know, and seeing all of it, I'm not sad. I'm more just kind of like disappointed that people are giving up so easily and trying to chase something that I know isn't going to work so well for a long time. Will AI work? Absolutely. I use AI for certain things, not everything, but like little tiny things to help me work. But a lot of people right now are just looking to AI as the fix all for everything. But the problem, man, the biggest one is they start doing it. They figure out that AI doesn't work for them. And they're like, you know what? I'm just not going to get into virtual production. If AI can't do it, there's no way I'm going to try to spend all this time to do that. And that's what I've seen the majority of people do and people that I've talked and had meetings with. So what was going to be covered, though, in my course was, you know, the first thing was I wanted to talk about why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't, let's not get into the how-tos yet. I wanted to prime people's hearts. I wanted to prime them for all the successes and failures, and I wanted to prime them to enjoy the failure process. Because that's the one thing that really separates the highly successful people from the people who get nothing.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of people, they think they can just spend all their money buying a motion capture suit and a crazy beefy computer and all this stuff, right? Only to get into it and go, now I have all this stuff. What do I do with it? Right. But they didn't have any idea to begin with what it was, right? Mm-hmm. And if they get frustrated and they have no reason to love it, they're going to quit. And I truly believe, like, I have that thing in my head and my heart where I'm like, if I get it excited about it, I learn quickly. But you know what? We all do. And that's why I wanted to, I just wanted to create that mindset shift in people to help them get to my mentality and mindset of this is fun and love every piece of this. Like every time you fail at something, get excited because that is an opportunity to learn something you don't know. And for every mistake you make is just an opportunity to be better, an opportunity to be smarter. Like, you know, they say, to become old and wise, you must first be young and stupid. I've made so many mistakes in my life at this point, man. I'm a freaking wizard, you know, and I want to train wizards. So that was just step one. Step one was that.
That's day one. Yeah.
let's talk about falling in love. The second one, nope, not unreal yet. It was going to get into who are you talking to? How, like, why, what's this thing that you're saying to this person? This why, because you're creating this thing. Is it for you? Is it for them? And the reason is because this helps you understand feature creep. This helps you understand what a scope is supposed to be for a project like this. Because a lot of people, they have these giant dreams and they get bigger and bigger and bigger, and they allow themselves almost to like get so big that they get covered in the cloud of ideas that weigh them down, and they start feeling like they're not good enough, like they're not going to be able to succeed at this. So by helping them understand who they're talking to, they can go, okay, what is and is not important to this person? What do they want? What do they need? And what sort of things am I just doing because it sounds cool, right? Mm-hmm. So like, there's certain things you have to let go of. Like hyperrealism, the majority of people out there, they don't really care about hyperrealism. I'll be honest with you. I could jump onto a character right now and be that character, and people will love it. Mm-hmm. If it's stylized and it took me, you know, an hour to make, they would love it. Even if it's not like a metahuman, which I don't really like metahumans.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my thing.
I really like Mr. Yaki, by the way. That was a cool character.
Oh, I love Mr. Yaki. But you know, it's things like that that are just really simple. And so what I'm saying is like, sometimes it's the simplest thing that your audience needs. It's a simple little tiny things. And that's something. So that was that one. So the next one, of course, is like, okay, now let's get into Unreal. What is it? Da, 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 da. And I also wanted to, in the process of teaching them the basics of how Unreal works, it's very important to understand where to find answers and how to find the answers. So while I'm teaching people how to do the very basic things, I also wanted to teach them how to find the answers that they don't know that they need the answers for. How do you search in Google? How do you search in YouTube? How do you find exactly what you want? Because sometimes the key to being a really great developer is knowing how to search for the answer, right? And so like giving them that power really helps them with their process as well, you know. And through all this process, this whole thing, you know, I told you about like Unity. Like I really love a really clean, super clean file structure. I really like to have things in great order. I want to train people that have that file structure. I want to be able to close my eyes and know exactly where to go when they call me. Like, wow. I want to be able to be playing with my project over here and doing my thing while they're telling me, hey, how do I do this thing? Okay, go to your characters folder, go to materials, go to mesh, go to this thing. And then on the third node to the left, go to this emissives material. And then we're going to change this time dial, you know, like that sort of stuff. That's what I want for them to do, because that's what I can do for everything I do.
Wow.
So, and then of course, as you go, it's just understanding what's the golden rule of film, you know. Let's talk about a story circle. I didn't want to just give a Unreal lesson. I wanted to give a life lesson that featured Unreal.
So cool. I love that. I hope you do it someday. I would be first person to sign up. I am curious also, just based on what you're saying, do you have an eidetic memory?
Oh, what's that?
I think it's the more correct term for what people would commonly call a photographic memory.
Oh, no way. No.
Interesting. But if you have a really organized structure for how you, you know, set up your projects and your blueprints and all that, does that maybe help create a bit of a mental map where it is very easy for you to see where everything is? And then maybe also when you go to sleep and you're still working on projects, that level of organization helps you continue to work on them?
Exactly. All in repetition. I do exactly the same thing for every single project. Like I know how to name, how to put it, how to, you know, structure my files. And, you know, when I've worked with other people and I've taught them this method, we work faster, we work better, and we're super efficient, you know? And so like, that's like, I'm working on another team right now. And that's what we're doing. It's like, I've taught them how to do this thing. And so they're doing that. So I've got like two or three projects happening at any given time. So like one of my things is a AAA game that I'm working on with another team, but I can't talk about that. But yeah, anyway,
We'll get you back for part two when it comes out and talk more about it. I want to go back briefly to what you were talking about with learning how to enjoy failing. That's something that I definitely felt grateful for learning in architecture school. Just you get brutalized. I mean, there's a healthy way to do this in a not so healthy way, but I think I was able to kind of survive failing over and over and over again with different levels of commentary on that, to the point where I did at some point realize like, oh, I don't mind that. I don't mind having it criticized. And I like the failure part. And I like realizing all the things I've learned. But there's a story I want to try telling. I only heard it one time and I might not remember it perfectly, but maybe you even know it, Corey. Do you know the story of who everyone thought was going to be the first person to successfully fly a plane?
No, I'd love to hear it.
All right. I'm going to give the bastardized version of this, but there was a man by the name of Samuel Pierpont Langley, and he had spent 17 years very well funded by the War Department, grabbing a huge team, had all the resources you could possibly imagine. At the same time that the Wright brothers were off over in, was it Kitty Hook or something, with their like, you know, very small, scrappy kind of like startup mentality of what they were doing. And everyone was so convinced that Samuel Pierpont Langley was going to be the person to fly for the first time that the New York Times was like following him around, like they were documenting everything. And they figured it was just a matter of time until he was going to do it. The Wright brothers, on the other hand, I'd say the biggest difference that they had was the Wright brothers were intensely passionate about this. This wasn't something they wanted to do just to say they were the first people to do it. This wasn't something that they were being paid to do. This was like this obsessive hobby that they were also getting immense joy out of. And every time something crashed or broke, they never felt this kind of fear of failure. It was always like, oh, okay, how do we iterate on that and do the next thing? And so, of course, as we all know from history, the Wright brothers did, of course, become the first people to fly. And I think it says so much about Samuel Pierpont Langley, this person who none of us remember now, that his response to the Wright brothers flying wasn't, oh my God, how did they do that? I want to iterate. I want to figure out how to one-up them. I want to start like a flight war. He just gave up. He just completely gave up and like never touched that ever again and probably went off and bought an island and just, you know, relaxed for the rest of his life. But I think this love of failure, that's what that reminded me of. And I think that's such an important lesson.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because like here we go on another life. I learned to love failure from my time on Naked and Afraid, which was a Discovery Channel show. And so I went out there. I did horribly. But when I went,
it wasn't feral, your fault.
It wasn't my fault. But honestly, I was supposed to fail. No, it's not scripted. It's all real. But like I was not meant to make that. Anyway, so on Naked and Afraid, I got to a point where I had no food for 5 days. I had no sleep for 5 days. I was starving. I was everything. And at that point, I had nothing else but to be like, I have to change my brain. I have to change all this. And I was actually out of my mind too, legitimately. But I started to like hear voices, which is funny. Something happens to you when you're out there like that, because you know, the lack of proteins in your brain and lack of sleep, you actually go clinically crazy. Wow. But I started going, I have to enjoy this for what it is. And every single time I fail, I need to learn this. Like, what am I doing wrong? And then all of a sudden, when I started realizing that and started pushing into that, things started going right. I started eating again. I slept. And then all these things were happening. And I mean, eventually I had to tap out because I was very sick. Yeah. I was very sick. But I came home just a different person, and it was like the best worst experience of my life. So like that learn to embrace the suck really was like one of the greatest lessons, man. And it's really helped me in my career and my personal life in a lot of places. So yeah, it's like, it's bigger than this. It's bigger than Unreal. You know, it's bigger than a lot of things. It's life, man.
Yeah.
Love the process of living.
Love it. Yeah. I think you, when I think of you, I think gratitude and I think savviness. And I think that you've got something figured out that a lot of people are still chasing when it comes to how to enjoy each moment, each day, and to really, you know, not be afraid to fail, to try new things, to do the things that you really want to do. I think there's a lot of people out there who you and I are both trying to raise up, who have incredible potential, ideas, creativity, mm-hmm. but they just don't feel like they have a real path toward bringing that out into the world. So
yeah,
thank you for continuing to inspire people. Yeah.
That's one thing I really want to talk about real quick. There are a lot of people out there that they want to do these things. They have big ideas, but they are so afraid. They're so afraid of change. And I understand that some people have kids. I have kids. They have other people relying on them. Maybe they don't have a lot of money, but there's always a way. There is always a way to chase that thing that you love. And there is always a way to monetize in some way, shape or form. And it's like I know this sounds weird. This sounds so weird, but never once have I succeeded in chasing money. Money has always just found me after I've succeeded. What I chased was the feel of life. What I chased was that feeling of discovery and newness. And all of that I would pay for. Like, think about it. If you had millions, like you had unlimited money right now, what would you do? Right? I'm losing it. I know, because I get a little bit too passionate about this thing. But like, I'm just saying, like, every day of your life is a chance to like do this thing. And now it's like, if I was to be, I've gotten myself to a point. I'm losing it. Come on, brain. I've gotten myself to a point where I have taken so many risks in my life that have paid off because I believed in them so much.
Yeah.
That now it's like, yeah, I lost it. Dang it. It was going so good. And then I got a text message. See, this is the ADHD thing, right?
Yeah,
now.
Sure.
Because you're like, yeah, what's it? No, okay.
I get it though. No, I mean, to run on that though, I mean, I totally get what you're saying. Also, just brief question. because I think we could talk a lot about neurodiversity and ADHD and different kinds of ways everyone's brain works. And also, as I also have a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old who I believe we need to get like the proper diagnosis. I believe they both have ADHD, among some other fun things going on. I'm curious just what your general thought is when it comes to like, you know, medication versus like different ways of learning how to do things, and how we fit square pegs into round holes when we have this kind of society that really likes to have school system that fosters a particular kind of learning, but not all the different kinds of learning out there.
Well, none of us are the same.
Yeah.
Just like Unity and Unreal, like you've got to do what's best for you. As a parent, you've got to do what's best for them. Mm-hmm. You know, and in my opinion, there is no wrong answer. There are only different answers in this case. Like, well, obviously there are some wrong answers, you know, but like, let's be real about like medication. It depends on the kid. It depends on the adult. You know, like I tried medication and it did a lot of really great things for me, but it also took away my spark, mm-hmm. you know? And so for me, medication is not the thing. Instead, I lean into my ADHD and sometimes it gets a little frustrating. Like the fact that I'm like, man, I was going to say something great. And then I after one text message, I would not want to take this away from myself. It's a gift, man. Like neurodiversity, it's like ADHD. It's not a disorder. It's a different order. Mm-hmm. It is a natural way. I bet you ADHD it's been around since the dawn of humans, man.
Oh yeah.
That's it. Right-handed or left-handed. I'm ambidextrous. I'm legitimately like the real life ambidextrous where I can do all the, you know, like,
so cool.
Try this here. Fun thing. This ambidextrous thing. Make one finger go one way. Right.
All right.
Mm-hmm. And one finger go the other.
Okay.
As simple as this.
Oh my God.
Without thinking.
I've never tried to do this before, and that's really awkward.
Yeah. Those of you at home, try it. One finger go one way, go into it. And
bizarre.
And, yeah. So that anyway. I think drummers I hear can learn that, but that's part of neurodiversity as well, it's a different way of the way your brain chemicals work and how your firing goes. So no, it's all up to you and how you want to do all that stuff. I personally put my kids into a private school that have it. It's like where they train the creative X-Men man. It's like,
so
it's
cool.
Expensive, but it's amazing because they just give them all the things for creation. They've got like the best band program in the freaking country. And like, there's all this stuff anyway.
I love that. Yeah. And you did mention briefly that you did not have the best childhood. What are some of the things that you're trying to make sure your kids have access to and get to do that you did not when you were a kid?
The biggest things I'm trying to help them with, first of all, is attention from parents.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get that.
Somebody
to help them understand the world and to navigate it properly, because I didn't have that. But you know, it's like I've forgiven my mother for that. Like, there's other things that have happened, and I'm not going to get into my story, right? But for my kids, more than anything, it's just I'm going to help them, and I have been working my best to help them understand what the world is, how they can do good in it, and how they can, you know, make the best out of it for themselves. And I'm really leaning into whatever it is they want to do. You know, I'm always listening, I'm always loving, and I'm always letting them make their own mistakes, you know, to a point. But I try my best, and I'm going to make mistakes. I mean, just like any human, I don't know what it is going to be yet. Like, I'll find out later when they're like emotional damage. What? Sorry. I didn't know that taking the trash can at 9 PM woke you up and it startled you every now and then.
Whatever it was.
I got nothing.
Someday they'll have therapy and they'll untangle it all. And they say, here's the things you did wrong.
Yeah. I think the only thing I do wrong right now as a dad, and I'll be completely honest, I know I work a lot.
Yeah.
And it's really tough for me because I've spent so many years working a lot because I love what I do so much. And I feel like I have this like spiritual responsibility to impact the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like it's built in me. Like I have a phoenix here. It's a tattoo I drew.
Oh, cool.
And it's, it means I live forever through the inspiration I give others throughout my lifetime.
Oops,
that's my mantra. Yeah.
There we go. Hold on. Can I see the tattoo again? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's actually, so cool.
That's actually in my game too. So Monster Quest, you'll see that tattoo up on the thing. But that's my thing is, I just want to do really good for the world.
That's really cool. One more question I'll ask about family and kids, because it's come up on the podcast a few times. What's your general approach to, you know, let's say screen time, social media, phones, VR, all of those different things? And, you know, have you set up like clear rules where you're like, here's what we do and don't do, or do you kind of take it as it comes?
It's kind of both, you know, like if I find it starting to get unhealthy, you know, I take my kids off the screens and say, hey, let's go, you know, we're going to go for a walk. We're going to go for a hike. We're going to go for a drive, whatever it is, you know, and that stuff. Cause the kids do need to live in real life.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing. I grew up playing video games because I came from a family where I was neglected. Right. So that's all I did. And I look at myself and I go, man, I did okay. There's also that nurture nature thing. I think it was in my nature to somehow I came out fine because it's in my nature. Mm-hmm. But you know, everyone is different. And so like I just kind of watch them. But so far my kids have been doing really good about screen time and all of that. I don't think it's rotting their brains. I think it's helping them, you know, understand the world in ways that we didn't have an opportunity before as kids, right? And so yeah. I'm allowing them to have that, especially now, since they're still kind of young. But it's not like they're out playing Fortnite. Like my kids do not play Fortnite, unless they're playing my game, in which case, like they're still too young anyway. So like, whatever. But no, I right now during the summertime, I let my kids play Roblox. Mm-hmm. You know, so we watch them, and I'm doing my best to keep my money in my pocket because good Lord, man,
it goes quick.
Give me Roblox. I need this skin. Oh. But no, during the summertime, I let them have it because they have a bond with their friends, like their physical friends.
And yeah.
So that's fine.
The real people. That's really mm-hmm. cool.
But take it as it comes. Like everything we do, like drink in moderation. You mm-hmm. know, if it's a problem for you, don't drink at all.
Yeah.
You know, water, heck, water is unhealthy for you. If you drink too much, you can die from drinking too much water. So don't drink too much water. Like we know stuff.
Quote, you know, the Morton Joe from Mad Max Fury Road, do not become addicted to water. It's a good quote. yeah. So, and I think going back to the thing of feeling like, you know, maybe sometimes you work too much and you're trying to balance being a good dad and being there for your family and giving to the world. I feel like one of the ways that you've started to address that is including your kids, obviously, of course, in your YouTube videos. But I know maybe your son was also involved with like music or sound effects for Monster Quest. Do you want to talk about how you start to bring them into your work?
Yeah. So my kids, even though I work a lot, they know that daddy, I'm not working.
Right.
They don't really call it work because this is a tricky situation. It's like the work I do is who I am. It's not like I'm going to some, you know, car auto shop and I'm having to do cars. Like, no. Like it's creative work. It's a piece of me, right? If I was retired, if I had all the money in the world, I would still be doing this.
Yeah.
Because that's what this is worth to me. This is worth millions, even if I don't get paid millions, whatever it is, right? So for them, they just go, it's kind of like daddy's going to play.
Right.
And sometimes that, you know, they come here to play with me
mm-hmm.
because it is playing. It's a playground, man. Like, look at this thing I'm making behind you there, man. This is me playing. I've been frustrated at what happened with Monster Quest because of all the things that happened with Epic. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. So what do? I come here and I start creating this art because this makes me feel good.
You know?
It's not that my family doesn't feel good, but I just, and also I have time blindness. I get really excited about things and I go, ooh, it's 6. I'm out. I got to leave.
That's amazing.
Maybe I don't work too much, but I definitely think a lot about this stuff, and I know I do, and I do my best to you know, give my wife the time without thinking,
mm-hmm.
which is another reason I spend so much time now asking questions more than talking about myself. Like here, I'll talk about myself because this is where we're here, but
yeah, and from a time management perspective, you seem like someone who can hyper focus, get into a flow state, and like really crank out some amazing work. But you also seem like someone who likes to be organized and have a schedule. So how do you balance a situation where maybe you like have other appointments or things you're going to do, but you also are like, oh, I'm doing such cool stuff right now and I don't want to stop.
Okay, let me tell you this though. You cannot combine schedule and organization.
Mm-hmm.
Because schedule, no. I suck. Man, I miss so many things. If it doesn't beep in my face and have flashes all over the place, I'm like the nutty professor. Like I can do great things, but man, you need to remind me a lot. You know, like I was very glad you reached out to me the number of times you have for this, you know. I was very excited though, so it's not like you needed to. But no, but the organization helps me flow faster.
Yeah.
You know? And I get excited by the organization because I know that if I put that there, that's where it's going to be. You know, like I don't have OCD or anything like that, but I like to know where things are because I am a creature of habit.
Yeah.
And so I play into those habits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. We have to talk a little bit about this amazing thing behind you. If I didn't already know who you were, I'd say like, oh, what studio is working on this? Looks like a game that's been in progress for like a couple months now. I want to hear all about the team and, you know, all the work going into it. But because I know something about you, I'm going to assume this is pretty fresh. Tell us more about what we see behind us.
Yeah, so this is a project I started about a day and a half ago after I got frustrated with Epic. And this is going to be a new game called, well, Ringworld Free-for-All. That's what I'm going to go with. This is my title. Basically, it is a UEFN free-for-all map where they start out inside this little space vessel here. And when they start out inside the space vessel, they're greeted by this giant robot that is looking at them and floating in space. And he is turning this giant wheel. And so it is constantly rotating. So the players, they come out and they land in random places here as this wheel rotates. And let me get the I'll turn the level sequence on because as of right now, I can't just play the game, but it works. I've genuinely played it and it's beautiful. I'll get the rotator started here.
Yeah.
So, might close out here. There you go. There, so you can kind of see him moving. So it's a bit of motion capture with a very slow rotation. And then also all of these are skeletal meshes that I actually animated just before I jumped on the call. So they actually move and stuff. And the real size of the player is like, they're about this big.
And
so imagine the player this big and that being that big. I don't know if you got a real good sense, but...
Yeah,
it's a wild experience. And so when you're running, this is almost like running speed as fast as this is moving.
Wow.
And so imagine running and jumping around the obstacles as these things are going. And I'm still adding things in.
Yeah.
And then if you jump off the world, of course, you're going to die or whatever. But yeah, he looks around and I thought about having him fire lasers at him and stuff like that to just make it a little bit harder. But we'll see how it goes in the testing phase. But it's super cool. Very simple concept. It was all this stuff was built in Blender. Just worked on that real quick, and all these are just a spline with a skeletal mesh in there with a bunch of different bones to make all of these move.
Yeah,
and then I just did bender bones, and then I'll show you the benders because these work cool too. That's what I was just like working on just before I talked to you. But yeah, it's super brain. Sometimes brain likes to jump around.
Yeah.
Okay. So, try Vine. Oh, wait, actually, I can pull in. I do have to run it. Darn it. Oh, well. But yeah, so this is the animation sequence, but you can't see the animation sequence because of the way that I've built it. But yeah, you'll have to just see it in the game.
Yeah. What an exciting preview. So this begs the question, of course, obviously you haven't been working on this for very long, but is this an idea that's been percolating for a while? Where did this come from?
Yeah, so this idea came from while I was working on Monster Quest. I was playing through a lot of maps to just try to, you know, check out the different guns. And I was like, why do these maps always just kind of stay the same? Mm-hmm. How come the maps don't move constantly or keep you on your toes? Like, because there's a lot of people that seem to camp or they'll build up a little bit and da da da. But I was like, there's got to be something different. I was like, man, what if I built this really awesome thing that, you know, kept you constantly on your toes. So it levels the playing field a bit because people, they're so good. They need something else to challenge them. And I think this will be that challenge. And yeah, I won't tell you the whole process of exactly how I created it because if someone's going to try to take this
idea steal
and run with it.
Yeah.
But you know, after if you're going to take this idea, wait at least until I put mine out so I can have a little bit of time. Because I know that if it does well, it's going to be stolen and, you know, that's the nature of the game, and that's what I expect. So
It's a really good idea. And I haven't gone into too many custom Fortnite maps, but I definitely haven't seen anything remotely like this. But like you said, you know, this is going to be more of a PvP game. And it does seem like the kind of thing that the average Fortnite player could get a really big kick out of.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, if you really look at it, like right now, there's a good reason why people don't create narrative pieces on Fortnite. Because they just didn't come for that. Like, people are playing Fortnite to play Fortnite.
Right.
Not to play, you know, things like Monster Quest or whatever. And like Monster Quest, you know, it was a month of work and I just today broke 100 plays. That's it. That's the number of people who have played my game is 100. You know, and it, the worst part is it's 100, but the people that played it played a broken version because Epic hasn't figured out what's wrong with their server that the game is sitting on.
Yeah.
And so, and I've been working my butt off to try to fix it, but no, it will get there. And I think over time there will be stories that'll be worth being told. Like I'll say this about myself. Like, I am not Hideo Kojima. I'm not going to make the next crazy groundbreaking game. Like, you know, I'm also not, you know, who's a famous director that's really, really good at directing, you know, Christopher Nolan or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not that guy. I'm literally just one guy trying to create something to just see what's possible. Yeah. What can one person do given no budget and a little bit of time, you know? And so that's, I think, over time, as people get better at this stuff and as the tools get better, you will start seeing maybe a little bit more narrative. But as it is right now, I mean, narrative stuff on Fortnite, I just don't think it'll perform well at all.
Well, that's too bad, because we were really inspired by you and we're also thinking, like, maybe we want to start putting some narrative stuff there. But I think you're right that that's just not why a lot of people are in Fortnite. So you'd really have to you'd almost have to be bringing in a new audience who isn't even used to Fortnite because they're so excited about the narrative content.
Right. And I want to bring in a new audience, but I will not bring my audience to a broken game.
Yeah, that's
and
fair.
That's where my, like, I will not promote my game at all. Outside LinkedIn, I will. That's fine. But, like, I will not promote it to my YouTube stuff because it's so broken.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if you worked really hard on a YouTube video and, the color balance was totally off or it just glitched out every 3 seconds and there was no way you could guarantee people were going to just be able to watch the video the way you made it. That would suck.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So, but yeah, I'm trying my best to just, you know, keep moving forward. And, you know, this Monster Quest was a failure. Honestly, it was a failure. It was a flop. And who knows, maybe it'll revive somehow. But it wasn't a complete failure. Again, it was a learning lesson.
Yeah.
And I got excited by the lesson that I learned. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to create this because I know this is what the community of Fortnite players will probably get all excited about.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I hope at the very least people can recognize the artistry that went into having these incredibly robust custom characters that you rigged and animated and just bring this world to life. So, you know, in theory, Monster Quest will never disappear. And who knows? It still might become viral. We don't know what the future looks like. And I think there's a lot there that people can draw inspiration from. So even if you call it a failure, I'd say it's an incredible precedent. And I hope that it inspires a lot of good work in the future.
Yeah, I hope so, too. And more than anything, I hope it inspires originality.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, you have to realize, like, originality does not pay off on UEFN right now.
Yeah.
Like, copying other people does.
I hope that algorithm changes. That'd be real nice.
It will. It will. Give it time.
I'm glad that you brought up the notion, though, of wanting to show what's possible for, like, one person with no budget. And by the way, I meant to say when we were talking about AI a little earlier that it made me so angry on your behalf when you were entering into a short film competition and you were not taken seriously because people thought you'd done it with AI because they just didn't believe that one person could do all the things you did.
Yes, I was so disappointed. I mean, I will be honest, though. I mean, it wasn't the greatest story ever written. Like, it was literally the second story. I only spent 2 days on it instead of the like full 3 days that I had. But it's still, I got disqualified because they thought it was created by AI.
Yeah.
And I thought, man, that sucks. But also,
flattering.
All right. A little bit flattering. Yeah. I was also coming off a high because I won 3 major awards at the previous film festival that I was at, and that was for my film Big Hurt. And I thought this one I was really going to, you know, blow them out of the water, because, you know, I had 72 hours to create it instead of 48. But no, that just wasn't the case. But that's, I mean, I'm in that situation. But that film still, I was able to showcase my ability to turn people into digital humans in a same day and have them play as their digital selves in that same day. You know, so I showcased my speed, and that alone has gotten me work.
Yeah.
You know, like some of the work that I do, it's not even an Unreal Engine. Some of it, a lot of it is just like outside. Like I do work with Blender. I do work with other things and do hyperrealism. It's just like just showcasing the different things I can do.
That's amazing. And again, I'm just so happy that you're trying to show people, you know, what one person can do. Because yes, certainly you're an incredibly talented guy, and some of the stuff you're showing, really only Corey Williams can do it. But a lot of it is stuff that if someone just watches your workflow and kind of takes this step by step, they could do a lot of it too. I remember you did a video not too long ago where you were kind of breaking down different mocap systems. And we did something kind of similar last week. We had Eugene Chung from Penrose Studios in our office, and we were also trying to see how we could compress, you know, the timeline they used to have for doing their short films, their little like Pixar VR films, into something that could happen over a week. So a big part of that was studying some different mocap workflows, and we kind of came up with a hybrid solution that used Sony Mocopi and a MetaQuest Pro for hand tracking and eye tracking and mouth tracking. And it was in that kind of same spirit of like, what can we kind of hand to the world and say, here is a very affordable, easy thing that one person could pick up and use without having a giant studio at their disposal. And to get to a question there, I think I'm just kind of wondering as well, how do you kind of strike that balance between trying to find out how you can inspire people, but also not giving them too much hope if what you're doing is actually pretty hard and does require like a level of tenacity and passion and love of failure that is a little rarefied at this moment until we get more people comfortable with those hurdles?
Yeah, I mean, again, this goes down to the simple idea of why are you doing it?
Yeah.
That's why it's so important to have a reason. You know, and starting simple, like, you know, knowing your audience, how you can give them the simplest possible thing to learn from.
Yeah,
I think that's my only answer that I have to that is like, yes, this stuff is hard. Yes, this stuff is complicated. But for me now, because I am past the hard phase, I don't even have to think anymore. I just can do it. Like you can tell me to create something and in a matter of minutes, I'll have that for you.
That's like, cool.
It's to that point.
But in that ideation, because I'm actually surprised to hear you say that, like, can you take someone else saying, hey, Corey, go make this thing right now? And can you get excited about that the same way that you would if it was an idea that you came up with? Talking Inception.
Oh, man, I'll tell you. Okay, so I have turned away some massive money projects that I didn't believe in.
Mm-hmm.
There was one project. It was $250,000 project they wanted me to do. And it was last year. I won't say their name, but they never got off the ground.
Yeah.
But still, out of respect, the idea that they had at first was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I could get behind this. You know, like I listened to it and I listened to their pitch and all that stuff. And it's for me, it's the other way around. Clients pitch me. I don't pitch to clients. Like I don't like if you come to me, like you want me. I'm not going to come to you.
Yeah.
But I listened to their thing. And what I realized right off the bat was they didn't know who they were talking to or why they were doing it. It's one of those things of like, we have a lot of money. We're going to throw it at this thing and we're going to make something good out of it. But I'm like, I have to think about myself as a creator and also like what people see of my work. And if I don't believe in this thing, no amount of money is going to make me believe it anymore. Like you can't pay me $2 million for me to believe that you're talking, carpet tile is going to inspire the world.
Right.
I don't have much around me today, man. Carpet tile. That's what I got. That's pretty not interesting. But no, it was like that though, you know, And the project was a 6-month project and I would have been just tied up for 6 months just doing that thing. And while it paid very well and, you know, arguably, yeah, like that's good. Like my Yeah, I'll be completely transparent. Like my weekly rate for the work that I do for people, it depends on the project. I have to be excited about it, first of all. But it's between 10 and 15,000 a week. That's my going rate. And I'm completely open about it. But that's, you'll get your stuff. It will get done in that week, typically, you know, and I'll be clear. But for that, that was like, oh man, I could just do that. But it ain't worth it if it's not fun.
Yeah.
You know, that time away or that frustration costs money. Because that is time away from your happiness and your livelihood. This life you only get one time.
Yeah.
You know? Whereas like, maybe I didn't make that much in the last 6 months, but you know what? I felt good every single day.
Yeah. And again, you sound like someone who already has all this figured out, but do you look back at like, was that a lesson you needed to learn? Like, did you have other jobs or commitments or things that took up way too much of your time where you really regret that experience? Or has this kind of been your modus operandi since the beginning?
No, I've went through experiences like this. Like I've had terrible clients, you know, and it's the terrible clients that were the lessons.
Yeah.
And so I've just really worked hard to screen out terrible clients. You know, I do it if I believe in it. I do it if it's fun. I do it if the team is open and if they understand the process well enough for me to be able to communicate with them. Because that's one thing I am. Like, I'm a master communicator. Like, I can, because I have so many areas of expertise, I'm able to communicate with all different people.
Yeah.
Like, my goal right now, honestly, as much as I love creating all of my own stuff, I am now to the point in my career that I want to find a team. Yeah. I would love to grow the team and I would love to do that. But I'll tell you, I suck at raising funding because I am too passionate about all the things that I do. And I'm too confusing. I am what they call a unicorn hacker. If you know the two business terms for starting a business, those are the two things. I'm a unicorn hacker. And so like I'm able to do all of these crazy things, but I'm not a founder. I am not going to be the leader in that sense. So I'm looking for a team where I can be those things and potentially be a director of that. Because I feel like as a director, I can speak to everybody and get the work done.
Yeah. Yeah. You're making me think of, I was really thrilled to meet you in person at Unreal Fest in 2022. And the same time I was meeting you for the first time, I was also meeting Corey Strausberger, the other excellent Corey in this field. Now, are you familiar with what he's been doing with Xanadu post when he was burning himself out doing it all by himself?
Yeah. So Corey and I are good friends.
Yeah,
We're close. I consider us pretty close friends.
Excellent.
Before then he was in the middle of creating games. He's actually like a highly award-winning VFX guy, man. Like, but before Unreal,
incredible.
He's been doing really great things. Like, this is his calling. The tough part for Corey, it's he has such a high level of ability and a high level of talent and skill that it just takes him a long time. But the thing about the things that he's doing is his audience is so niche and the time it takes is too slow for the way people consume content in this day shape, you know, this day. So for him, what was your question about?
The question was, because you're talking about like having a team behind you. And of course, Corey Strausberger went from being kind of solo with a lot of the Xanadu stuff to now having a team that's supporting him. I don't know if he's enjoying that process, but I'm curious if you've talked to him at all about what that's felt like and if there's any kind of roadmap there that you could follow as well.
You know, okay, so I haven't talked to him about those details as of right now. Like he just came through a lot of some health problems. And so more than anything, I tried to keep him encouraged through the process of recovering health-wise.
Sure.
But no, I know he's been looking to do that. I don't know how the process is going for him, but I don't know if I want to lead a team. I think I want to be a part of a team.
Like a director, like you said. Yeah.
Yeah. A director. That's just where I'm at, man. And here's the other reason is because I am so loose when it comes to creative direction. I'm just so used to constantly changing and doing all of these things all the time that like, it would be hard for anybody to truly follow me, you know, to be like, okay, Corey, wait, what are we doing now? Now we're making films. Wait, you're making games. Wait, what? You know, so I think I'm a bit tough there, but yeah, just I think that's where I'm at. Not that I'm like, hey, somebody hire me. I'll take my time. I'm enjoying what I'm doing, but that's ultimately where I want to end up.
That's interesting. I'm trying to think about the team you'd need to surround yourself with. Like, do you think you'd need like a really good producer who kind of keeps everything on task? Like, who do you imagine would be like, let's put it out into the universe. Like, what kinds of roles do you think around you would help you do your best work as part of a team?
Yeah, producer definitely, to make sure that everything is kind of going on track, because the speed at which I work, I have to have somebody to tell me like, okay, what needs to be done? All right, cool. I'll do that thing. And then I'll make it happen based on all of the people and all of that sort of stuff. And then just using my own abilities, but also not crossing the lines into other people's creative territories. Under me, I don't like to say under, because it's not really under. Working with me, I'd like to have other... collaborating with me. That's the best way. I'd like to have other people that are just highly passionate in their specific skills. You know, like, I am a jack of all trades. And that's what I need to be, is I need to be the middle. But I need to work with masters of single trades, you know, within these spaces. And I think that would do very, very well. What that looks like, I don't know 100%. You know, I tried to do that with Taiyaki Studios when I was working with Taiyaki Studios, and you saw Mr. Yaki. But the founders, I can talk about it a little bit. Founders had changed their positions and what they were doing and how they were going to do it and where they were going with the company so much that we just had a very hard time. And I was like, I don't want to be that boss either. Like, I don't want to constantly shift because all of the things that we're working so hard to, you know, achieve. Like, going into that, I was going to blow up their YouTube channel, and by now we would have been huge, man. I'm telling you. But we, you know, they chose other paths, and so I left because I was like, creatively, I don't want to be a part of this. It just doesn't feel right. And other things happen, and I'm very thankful I wasn't a part of them anymore, but yeah, that's for another time. But
yeah, and now you have Daydream Studios, which is a fantastic name, which for me, by the way, also evokes the Google Daydream, which was a VR headset I had a lot of fondness for before Google just completely gave up on it.
Yeah, Daydream Studios, that was I came up with that back in 2019, because it's more of like it is, I'm working in a virtual space. It is a literal dream that you're having in the day, and studios meaning an infinite amount of virtual spaces that I produce in.
Yeah. So. I love that. That's really cool. Now, I should have clarified this before we got started, but do you have a tutorial of some kind you'd like to show us today?
A tutorial?
No, it's okay if you don't.
No, that's okay. I mean, what do you want to know?
Oh, well, great. Let's see if we can do one on the fly. You've got UEFN open. What we try to do with our guests sometimes is have them give like a little 2 to 5 minute, like, here's a cool thing you can do in this application that maybe you didn't know about, maybe a thing you wish you learned sooner. Does anything come to mind?
Okay. So something you can do that's very simple. For example, this guy here. Let's talk about offsets. It's something that surprisingly not a lot of people know about when it comes to Unreal Engine. Or a lot of animation programs in general. Like, you can bring in motion capture data, whatever the data is, right? And you can do what's called additives. So what you can do is, I'm just going to create a new one here. So we've got our character. Right now it's Wallow casting Adam. This is actually a character from one of my short films called Wallow.
Cool.
So I brought Wallow into here. Anyway, so what we're going to do is I'm going to create a new level sequence very quickly. And after I get the level sequence, LS underscore, so level sequence underscore, Wallow underscore demo. DO, whatever. Okay, that's fine. And I'm going to quickly call in my character into this. So click on the character. I'm going to go to add to actor to sequence. And because he's selected, he's in there. So I'm now going to go ahead and import an animation. So here you can see he's just, it's a looping idle of me just, you know, doing some casting work.
Yeah.
And I'm going to pop it back one frame because I know the loop was slow. Anyway, you can see it works beautifully, right? So now what if we want our character to move his head and to do other things? We can do additives adding on to the motion. So what I'm going to do now is I'll just copy and paste this a couple times. Not too many. Oh, let's extend this out, actually. There we go. Da-da. And let's go one, Oh, I gotta actually copy it first. Okay. One, two. Brain. There. Okay. And then we're gonna close it off there. And now we're gonna have our nice little loop that actually does this three times. So now we're gonna do what's called our additive really quick. We're gonna go over here to our character. We're gonna right click on SK Wallow or your character, go to bake to control rig and FK rig. Everything has an FK rig. And then you'll be given this. Hit reduce keys. That helps you a lot in the future. What that's going to do is create a very quick keyframe, little keyframe area here that involves every movement of his body. But what I like to do is I will minimize that and then hit the little plus thing next to FK rig and then hit additive.
Very slow.
And then right click on the FK rig and then go to locked and lock that bad boy up so you don't mess it up. And now what we're going to do is first, because it is a loop, we're going to keep it looped. I'm going to go in the very beginning and I'm going to hit a keyframe right here to create a keyframe for every single one of the bones. And then I'm going to quickly jump to the end, create another keyframe for the very end so that we know that the looped animation is going to do the same thing from there to there. Well, let's say I want his head to spin wildly one way and then the other. What I can do is just kind of like go halfway right here and then I'll just grab his head. So let's scroll down to where it says head. Ah, there it is. And then let's take, I'll open this up so you can see a little bit better, maybe. We'll take the yaw. The yaw is going to be, well, so that's just, let's do roll, so right and left. So we're going to just rotate it like that. Minus 688. So what's going to happen is he's going to go,
exorcism.
It's exorcism. So it's an additive, and you're not doing any damage to the actual animation itself. And it's just a quick, easy way to clean stuff up. And there's a lot of people that I've seen where they do motion capture, but they never clean up the motion capture. And the great thing is it's like, like if you need a look position, you can keep that animation. Like if I need him to look down at the wheel, then simply just go over here and I'm going to say, oh, I want this character at the very beginning to go right there. I want him to look down. So I'm going to take this pitch and the roll. Oh, no, pitch and the yaw, probably. He's sitting in like at a weird position. So.
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
Right. So, and then I'll bring it up like this. And let's just say he's going to like watch that wheel for a while. Like maybe he looks over this way. Take it back this way. Right. And then maybe like he looks back around. So I'm going to grab the bottom. So he's going to look back down. And then scan his eyes back up to this side, maybe.
Yeah.
And now let's watch the process. So this is just doing basic offset. So he looks up. Yeah, okay. Wow, this looks great. Right? And then actually...
loops.
The loop, actually, that little break. There we go.
Yeah.
The loop is like one off. But you can see it's nice and smooth. Looks like we had one little jitter at the very end there, but that's right there. That'll do it.
Very cool. Yeah, and I believe this also works exactly the same way in Unreal Engine, right?
It's technically Unreal Engine 5.5. So right. This also, from what I understand, is a preview of what Unreal 5.5 is going to be.
Yeah.
So I don't know that 100%, but, And then, if you like that, what you can always do too, if you're like, oh, I love this, I want to add it to all my stuff, you can now bake it out so very quickly. You can just go up here. Right click on your character and then go to bake animation sequence, save it wherever you want, name it _anim at the very end, and then you're good to go. You've got yourself a brand new animation sequence there.
Very cool. Very strangely, we couldn't actually see the window that popped up, but yes, I promise what Corey just said is true. There is a window there that lets you bake the animation.
That whole thing?
No. Sorry, we could see the sequence the whole time. Literally just at the end where you right-clicked to bake it down, we couldn't see the pop-up window. But yeah, everything else was fantastic. Congratulations. You did not do the homework assignment, and yet you turned in something really wonderful there. What a perfect quick tip.
Yeah. I see a lot of people have that single problem, and that's one that I know will open somebody's mind somewhere at some point. Hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. And please let Corey know. Tell him, send him a DM on LinkedIn or something if he helped you get better at what you're doing. I felt very grateful in Prague over in Real Fest to meet some people who had nice things to say about me and the way I've helped them. And it feels really good. I'm sure there's thousands of people who can say that sort of thing. I'm like trying to remember what side Corey's on virtually. There's thousands of people who can say this sort of thing about Corey, and let him know. Let him know if he's made a difference in your life. Speaking of making a difference in people's lives, Corey, this is the part of the show where we also try to give a few shout outs to other folks in the community who we are inspired by, who we like talking to, who are creating good content. Is there anyone you would like to give a shout out to today?
Yeah, a big shout out to Anthony Evans, a really good friend of mine who does a lot of character creator work, and he's working very hard to just do a lot of things like that. And you can find his work at digitalpuppets.com, I believe is his website, or is it .uk? I don't know.
One of those.
Digital Puppets, Anthony Evans. Also, my friend Bartowski. Here we go. Hang on. I love Bart to death. He's like Bartowski. Bart, I'm so sorry, Bart. No, he's a really great guy, Unreal Engine technical artist who I've had the chance to work with while I was in London, or not London. I was in Paris. And I've worked with him on several projects, and he's just a really, really great guy to know. Like, if you ever want something weird solved, he's like this guy that just like comes up with the hackiest stuff. Like, he builds all his own helmets. His house looks like Rick Moranis's character from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Like, that's like that's his place, man. It's just like gadgets everywhere. I really just shout out to anybody who's still doing this and taking it serious and loving the process, man. That's really what it comes down to. Enjoy the process. Love it. That's all I ask.
Yeah. Good words. By the way, the first website is digitalpuppets.co.uk, and that'll take you to a very cool website. Wonderful, Corey. This has been such a fun discussion. One thing I'd like to end with is, what are you excited about for the future? And then what would you like your legacy to be 300 years from now, when people find a holocron and here's everything we need to know about Corey Williams? What are you hoping that people will find that you are known for that far in the future?
What I'm the most excited about for the future is literally just seeing the things that people create. At the end of the day, I'm also a consumer of content. Mm-hmm. You know, so like if I can create, help people create great things, then I get to enjoy the great things that are created, you know, is grow the space you love, grow the place you live, you know, like it's that, like, and just like I said about my tattoo, I live forever to the inspiration I give others throughout my lifetime. So I don't really care if my name is remembered. What I care about is if my ability to inspire people continues to help inspire people. Mm. Meaning like when I inspire you, you inspire someone else who inspires someone else.
Pay it forward.
That's what it is. So like, that's how I live forever, you know, like, cause your name, it's just a name.
Sure.
And we're all just a grain of sand at a beach, just flowing in and out of this place, you know, and that's all we'll ever be. Right now we have this beautiful moment, in the very briefest moment in our universe's life that we get to observe. We get to be here, you know. Why worry about what's going to be here when we're gone, when we can just worry about what we have right now?
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to be concerned with anything past me. Right now it's about this, and this is what I love, and I'm enjoying every second of it. I don't want to think too far past me.
This is our crew. Everyone alive right now, we're all here together. You know, we got to help each other. We got to encourage each other. And hopefully we feel pretty good about it in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you think about it like this, think the biggest, bigger picture, right? Like say like we leave this existence and then we show up and whoa, check it out. Everyone who has ever died is in the same room, right?
Sure.
Everyone ever. Like, you're going to talk to this person, they died billions of years ago. You're going to talk to this person and they were an ant. You're going to talk to da 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 da, right? But then like you'll come across somebody who was born in 1929 and died in 2025. Oh man, we're brothers. Because you got something in common. So you're right, man. That's what we are. Like we are brothers in a moment of time. You know. And we just, yeah, enjoy every little bit. We all breathe the same air right now. We're all seeing the same light of the sun. Enjoy every bit we can.
Man, kind words to end on. I love that so much. Thanks again, Corey, for being so generous with your time. I know there's a thousand other things you could be doing right now, and I can't wait to see this new UEFN map. To wrap up the episode, first of all, Corey, where are the best places for people to find you both digitally and potentially in person if you're doing any traveling over the next few months?
Sure. I will be at SIGGRAPH. I don't know if this is going to be going before
Denver.
SIGGRAPH, but yeah. I will be in Denver at SIGGRAPH, just kind of cruising around the floor. And then other than that, appearance-wise, no. I mean,
any chance we'll be in Seattle for an Real Fest?
I don't know yet. It just depends. I want to go. So right now, I will say yes. Just because it's unreal and I probably will. but other than that, social media, the best place to follow me right now, especially for the people watching me, most likely is going to be LinkedIn. Creator Corey Williams, I think, is my name on there. Yeah. But that's the best place.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's cool, too, because even though, of course, Corey is incredibly prolific with his various YouTube channels, he's been doing these kind of confessionals, not quite the right word, but these nice little like talking head moments on LinkedIn. That is very targeted. You clearly know your audience to those of us that are interested in some of the inside baseball stuff with this content in this world. So thank you for doing those. And please keep giving us your valuable thoughts on these various topics.
Well, thank you for saying that, because I was like thinking, am I being too open here? This is like a business thing. I'm still new to LinkedIn. I feel like I'm crossing the barrier. But no, I think it's important that we're open. And I think, you know, part of LinkedIn, it is still a social media platform, even if it is for business. And I just think right now, like it's very important for us to share the knowledge that we have and the experiences that we have. And I feel like I'm just in a situation where like I'm doing very well for myself and I want to share that.
Yeah. Amen, brother. That's so cool. Final notes for the episode. I am starting as a teacher for the Unreal Engine Fellowship on games starting tomorrow. I will be mostly absorbed by Epic Games for the next couple weeks. So anyone trying to reach out to me, just note that that will be taking up a significant portion of my time. Very excited to see what video games people make over the next few weeks. Corey, you ever been involved with the fellowships before?
No, I never know where to sign up for them or any of that sort of stuff. And I honestly don't really know enough about them to know anything.
Yeah.
I don't really understand them yet.
I mean, you would do amazingly at these. It's basically a structure of like you have a lecture in the morning and then there's like a live lab with TAs and various people helping out later on. And everyone's on kind of a team, even though you're ostensibly making something by yourself. So it's a very cool community spirit. And there have been a variety of different ones. This is the first one that's like video game focused, but there's going to be more of them. And I bet if you did one of them, not only would you really enjoy it, I bet you'd maybe make the coolest thing out of the whole group. I don't know. Just throwing that out there. It's a possibility.
No, there's no competition. It shouldn't be. I don't want to say coolest. Yeah.
Well, it would definitely be a Corey original. It would feel very much like something that only you could have made. So that's best compliment
I think I can give you. That's all I could ask for.
Yeah. A couple other things I wanted to mention. I will be releasing my Apple Vision Pro Unreal Engine template in the next couple weeks. Ooh. So keep an eye out for that. Right now we just have the Google Drive and the Gumroad and the more kind of exclusive club on Discord. That's about to become a little bit more open for the community out there. I feel like the Apple Vision Pro template is getting to a more stable place. Corey had mentioned, of course, that Fortnite is in 5.5. Also for this, you'd want to be in the Unreal Engine 5.5 source, which you have to get from GitHub. So there's a few steps to that. I will have documentation there. And besides that, we're going to release a little bit of stuff from last week with Penrose Studios and some of the mocap experiments and R&D. So look for links for that. Other than that, I am not traveling over the next couple weeks, not going to SIGGRAPH. I will be in Finland for a few days at the end of August. So if anyone is I'll be in Austin, Texas, end of August. We have some VIPs coming to our holodeck over there, the 5,000 square foot thing that we gave a little talk at Unreal Fest back in October for. So I'll be in Austin, then I'll be in Finland for before that, the end of this month. So end of July, early August, going there for a wedding, but I'll have a little time if anyone wants to say hi. And I think that's it for me. We've already had great closing words from you, Corey, but is there anything final you would like to say?
Just love whatever it is you do. Even if you don't get into this, find whatever makes you happy and do that. That's it.
Yeah, that's a good one. All right. Thanks, everyone, so much for listening. Thanks to Vikas Reddy and the Light Twist team. Thanks to Alan, our producer. Jacob, we'll get you back someday. I know he's been traveling for a while. And that's it. Goodbye. Goodbye. And thank you. And love each other. Yeah. Words of wisdom.